Good evening. I'll call the meeting to order. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. And I see we have a couple veterans in the back. If you would lead us in the pledge, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, guys. Item 3, roll call.
John Steinbrink.
Here.
Monica Juhas. Here. Steve Kmorkwitz.
Here.
Veid Allen.
Here.
Mike Serpy.
Here.
Quorum being present. Item 4, consider the proclamation to welcome the moving wall to Pleasant Prairie. John, if you want to.
Mr. Board, Mr. President, members of the board. Village of Pleasant Prairie has brought in the moving wall. And we're looking to have that in early September. And we do have a couple of gentlemen that are on the committee for the moving wall. If they wanted to stop up and say a couple words about the wall, this is probably a good time to do it.
Evening, gentlemen.
Hi, guys.
I'm going to ask you to give us your name and address for the record, because I know who you guys are, but the poor lady who writes all this out doesn't. So
you better know.
My name is Rich Balker. I live at 88, 2300 4th Avenue, Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. Me and John grew up together.
Still growing. I'm Paul Fredrickson. I'm the commander of the Pleasant Prairie VFW Post 7308. I live at 8821 65th Street. I'm also a member of the CAV.
Don Martinelli, 3811 8th Avenue, Kenosha, previously from Summers, and I'm a president of CAV.
First of all, I want to thank you for allowing us to get the wall here, and the support that you've given us has been, the support's been tremendous. Very proud as a member of the, and as the commander of the Pleasant Prairie VFW Post 7308. Not a lot of people know that we have a post in Pleasant Prairie. We're the only veterans organization outside of the CAV, which can cross the borders. So we're very proud that it's coming, and it's really important to us. And why it's important, I can tell you that to me it's very important. I have a couple of classmates from high school on the wall. Jerry Anderson, who's from Kenosha, and Dan Patrick, who's from Salem. I also lost a few pilots whose names are on the wall also, and close friends. And it's also important because when we got back from overseas, we were treated badly. And for a long time, we did not even admit that we were veterans. And we're over that now. And things like this and the support that we've been getting have certainly made up for that. Another thing is over 58,000 names are on that wall, men and women. And they're finding more and more as they are able to use DNA when they find wrecks. They can get some bones and DNA, and these people come back and we bury them properly. One statistic you should know about is that of the 2.7 million men and women who served in Vietnam, actually had boots on the ground, there were only one-third of us left. Some of us didn't die in Vietnam, and we were probably going to die because of Vietnam. Things that, Agent Orange and DDT and things that we were sprayed with and things that happened to some of our combat vets who are still alive. But we're very pleased and proud that the wall has come to Pleasant Prairie, and we want to thank you for helping us get this done. We still do need some volunteers, and we need some money because we figure it's going to cost about $20,000 to get the wall here, and we're not quite there yet. So we would like some further support from the community. So with that, I want to say thanks and turn this over to the other two guys if they got anything to say.
To me, the biggest thing about the wall is I've wanted to see it for a long time, and I want to read it. I know some of those guys.
Yeah, I got a lot of classmates that are on the wall that died over. John knows some of them, too, because it was in John's grade, too. As being a resident of Pleasant Prairie my whole life, it's an honor for me to even think of getting it to Pleasant Prairie. So this is fantastic. I hope it brings joy to you guys. I hope everyone here gets to go see it because this is something else. This wall is a half-scale wall, if anybody doesn't know, of the one in Vietnam. But everything on it is identical. The names are in identical spots. One thing is just smaller. You'll be able to get etchings off the wall just like you do in Washington, D.C. So it's going to be everything that you can do in Washington, D.C., you're going to be able to do with this wall here. And it's just a pleasure for us to, and an honor, privilege for us to have it here. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. And I think you're going to get a good turnout there because a lot of people haven't been to Washington to see it. And this is a real opportunity. And like you said, Rich, a lot of us here know the names on the wall. And we remember those people.
Thank you.
But with that, we also... First off, I want to thank you, gentlemen, for your service. And can I read the proclamation?
Sure.
And we have a proclamation. And this is the Village of Pleasant Prairie, the Office of Village President, proclamation. Whereas during March of 1973, the United States officially ended military involvement in Vietnam after participating in what remains one of the longest wars in our country's history, and whereas the last American casualties occurred in Vietnam in 1975 during a civilian rescue mission, and more than 58,000 American men and women lost their lives during the Vietnam War, and whereas it is important to honor the men and women who served our country and fought against the spread of communism in Vietnam, and whereas since their return, surviving veterans of the Vietnam War have contributed tremendously to their communities, their states, and the nation. And whereas area veterans and community organizations have joined together to bring the moving wall to Prairie Springs Park in the village of Pleasant Prairie between the dates of September 12, 2013 and September 16th of 2013. And whereas the moving wall is a half-size replica of the Washington, D.C. Vietnam Veterans Memorial, the moving wall was conceived of and built by Vietnam veterans as a remembrance and healing tool for all those who may have never had a chance to visit the memorial in Washington, D.C. And whereas the Pleasant Prairie Village Board of Trustees wishes to welcome the moving wall to the Village of Pleasant Prairie to express our utmost respect and appreciation for our country's veterans and to express gratitude to those helping to bring the moving wall to this community. Now, therefore, I, John P. Steinbrink, President of the Village of Pleasant Prairie, do hereby proclaim the period between September 12, 2013 and September 16, 2013 as the official visit of the moving wall to Prairie Springs Park. Encourage all in the community to visit the moving wall during its time here to honor those men and women who lost their lives in the service of our country during the Vietnam War. And this is given under my hand this day, August 2013. And once again, thank you, gentlemen, for your service. And I think we all have a deep sense of gratitude. And it's an era most of us grew up in. And we remember what happened then. We remember the treatment you got when you came home and the sacrifice you made. So thank you very much.
And you want to present it to him?
Pardon?
You want to sign it and present it to him?
Yes. So you gentlemen want to come up or just send Rich because he's the most able-bodied, I think.
That's the replica. That's the actual moon wall. It won't be the Christmas part, but it's not very under the path. This is on behalf of the Hanging with the path. You got a whole little section there.
Turn around.
Turn around.
Hopefully when the wall is here, we're going to get the whole board together with a picture of you gentlemen by the wall, and we can put that in our newsletter. So. That brings us to item 5 for the minutes of the meeting. This is for July 1st, June 12th, and July 15th, 2013. Presented to board members in written form.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Clyde. Any discussion on the minutes? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carries. Item 6 is a public hearings. First one being item A, consider Class B combination liquor license for Cheddar's Casual Cafe, currently under construction at 10355 77th Street.
Mr. President, board members, we have received an application for a Class B fermented malt beverage license and a reserve Class B intoxicating liquor license, as you said, for the Cheddar's Restaurant, currently under construction at 10366 77th Street. This is the third reserve Class B intoxicating liquor license. It mirrors all the requirements of a regular Class B. What it does have, though, is a $10,000 initial fee. And this was all done by the legislature back in 1997 with a bunch of calculations. They took some licenses away, made those regular licenses that we had as of then, and then they've added this kind of quota system and called them reserve licenses. So what happens is a reserve license is you pay the $10,000 initial fee plus the original licensing fees, which we have for everybody else, and you now have a reserve license. They pay the initial fee, and then once their license is renewed, it's back to the regular fees just like any other establishment. And the only reason, as I stated in here, Famous Dave's and Olive Garden have paid this is because our regular licenses are used up, and now we're into our reserve licenses, which we have 19 of them. The way you gain licenses is by population. So if our population goes up over $500 in a given year, you get one license. And so you just kind of keep adding that population, you get more licenses. The village is very fortunate that we have 19 licenses because a lot of communities don't have these licenses to issue. So we're very fortunate that we do have these licenses since our regular ones are used. So again, like I said, the initial fee is $10,000 plus the licensing fee for the Class B liquor and fermented malt beverage. If the license is approved and once it's issued, that fee would be prorated from the date it's issued through June 30th of next year. $10,000 is an initial fee. That's not prorated, but the license fee would be prorated. Plus, they would have to pay, as always, the publication costs for me to put it in the paper and any other fees as we've done in the past. In accordance with the municipal code that's on record, the board is able to grant this license for an initial period of 90 days until they open, but that time frame could be extended to 180 days if necessary. So obviously Cheddar's is trying to get everything in order, and they plan to right now open sometime early September is what I'm hearing. So the police department has completed their checks, publication was done, residence requirements for the agent have been met, and there's just a few other things that need to fall in place if the board approves the license. We do need documentation that the agent has satisfied the training requirements, and this is for all licenses, either by completing a responsible beverage server course or holding a license in the previous 2 years, either an operator license or a liquor license such as an agent for Cheddar's. Just a simple document that needs to be submitted. They need to pay the initial fee, which I do have a check that was submitted. And an annual license fee prorated, that will be prorated, publication costs, which we've now have from the Kenosha News, and, of course, the certificates of occupancy from the Community Development Department, the Inspection Department, and the Fire and Rescue Department, which obviously we wouldn't issue anything until they were authorized to use the building and open for business. So just as we've done with all the other licenses, the fee payments of taxes or any outstanding delinquencies would be have to be paid, and I've checked, and there are none to date. So just the standard licensing fees and the other few items that I mentioned, and the license, if granted, could be issued once I receive those certificates of occupancy. And this is a public hearing.
Okay, this is a public hearing. I'm going to open it up for public comment and question. Anybody wishing to speak on this item? Anyone wishing to speak on this item? Anyone wishing to speak on this item? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing, open up the board comment question. Mike?
Move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Okay. Motion by?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I think there might be somebody from Cheddar's that came here. They're here, yeah.
I am kind of hungry.
Yeah. I mean, you made a long trip to be here for the hearing, so, I mean, if there's.
Good evening.
Hey,
how are you? Just wanted to give the...
Could I have your name and address?
Richard Payne, 4901 Dublin Creek Lane, Parker, Texas, 75002.
We couldn't tell you were from Texas. So
well, I'll even scare you. I actually went to school in this state.
Oh. Well, I have a son that lives down in Texas, and he's starting to talk like you. So.
We're very grateful that we've been able to come to Pleasant Prairie, and we will be a good corporate citizen here. We've been around for 34 years. The two founders started this in 1979 in Dallas, Texas. And as of today, we opened our 144th restaurant. You'll be number 145.
It's a nice-looking building.
Yes.
It's very nice.
Getting a lot of comments from people on the building, how nice it looks. So.
Yeah, it's a nice building, all right. It's real stone and wood, unfortunately. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them for you.
I just want to add, when I was down in Austin, I stopped at several of the Cheddars down there, and also one on the way back. I think it was in northern part on the way up, and very good food, and I think everybody's going to be very happy with what you have to offer. And
thank
it's
you.
Very nice interior, very casual dining, and great food. So thank you. With that, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion from the board? If not, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. That brings us to item B. And thank you for making the trip up here. And what was your alma mater by chance?
Actually, I went to Carroll College.
Okay. Now, did you grow up in Wisconsin or just went to school up there? Okay. And we're not going to ask you about football or any of that stuff. So. But thank you for coming. So that brings us to item B, to consider resolution 13-17 to change the official address of the house at 5029 93rd Street, and this is to 5149 93rd Street.
Mr. President, members of the board, this is a request for the approval of resolution 13-17 to change the official street address. On July 15, 2013, the village initiated the change of an official address at 5029 93rd Street. This is the westernmost home on Outlot 4, as depicted on the screen, of the Devonshire subdivision. This particular house, when Cooper Road is dedicated with a certified survey map later this month, will make that the house at this location, the address will not be in the proper sequencing. And so, as such, we need to modify the address, and it's proposed that it go from 5029 93rd Street to 5149 93rd Street. This is a public hearing before the board this evening. The changes would be effective August 15th, 2013, if the board approves the public hearing and the change this evening.
Once again, this being a public hearing, I'll open it up to public comment or question. Anyone wishing to speak on this item? Anyone wishing to speak? Hearing none, I'm going to close the public hearing and open up the village board comment or question. If not, motion.
Motion to approve resolution 13-17.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Steve. Any discussion on this item? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. That brings us to item 7, citizens' comments.
There were no sign-ups tonight, Mr. President.
Anyone wishing to speak? Rob, if you can give us your name and address for the record.
Rob Zerban, 5406 2nd Avenue, Kenosha, Wisconsin. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak tonight, and I would like to, many of the members of the board should have all received an email from my committee. I have formed an exploratory committee to look into running for U.S. Congress again, and I wanted to come tonight to publicly invite you all to please join me for lunch at my office in downtown Kenosha. It's located at 5711 8th Avenue on Tuesday, August 13th. I'd like to take this opportunity to invite you to lunch and to discuss issues before our communities and how we could all work together. You know, should I choose to run again? Should I be fortunate enough to be the representative for Southeast Wisconsin? I'd like to have some existing relationships and understanding of what challenges you're faced with here in the Village Board of Pleasant Prairie and things that you've seen around the community that you feel need to be addressed. So I hope you can attend. Please RSVP to my office number 262-657-7400 or RSVP to my committee coordinator, Al, at robzerbot.com. Just respond to the email. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Okay. No. Anyone else wishing to speak? If not, I'm going to close citizens' comments, move on to item 8, administrator's report.
Mr. President, I have one thing that I'd like to bring to the board's attention. You know, we've been going through the process with the Wisconsin Public Service Commission to evaluate a proposed rate increase from the city of Kenosha for municipal water. We received notice from the Public Service Commission that the city of Kenosha had approved the commission's findings as a result of the hearings that have been held over the a good part of this year, and so the rate will be, they're going to be beginning to build the village August 1st for the new increase in service. Originally, they'd filed for a request back in October of 2012, and at that time, they were looking for roughly a 9% increase on average of $1,052,000, and we'd gotten a copy of their service charges and how they allocate that. That would have represented a 16% increase to the Pleasant Prairie Water Utility. Based on that, the Village Board directed the staff to file an action to intervene in the rate process so that we could have our side heard as to what we thought the rate should be. And in fact, we did do that. Subsequent to the village intervening on the process. Once we intervened, Kenosha then raised their rate up to $11,731,000, and it would reflect a 34% increase on the village's water rates. We went through a fairly long and lengthy process to demonstrate that the Pleasant Prairie Water Utility, aside from buying water at one central point on 7th and 80th Avenue, is a self-sustaining water utility. We purchase water in quantities that enable us to provide any of the needs that is required in the village. And, the thrust of our argument is that we're able to store the water that we need, we're able to convey the water we need throughout the village, we're able to provide the pressures needed through the elevated storage we have, and that we take care of the entire water system. The Kenosha Water Utility doesn't do any maintenance efforts at all beyond the metering point. So consequently, we felt that we were entitled to a better treatment than we were receiving. In fact, we were not under the Kenosha rates, we would not receive the lowest cost, although we were by far Kenosha Water Utility's largest customer. In the rate findings that were announced, I got these today, that what the Public Service Commission basically on five of the items, agreed with the village, and two of the items they didn't. And the two items they didn't agree with was public fire protection. They still felt that Pleasant Prairie relied on the Kenosha system to provide enough water to fight fires. We thought we'd made a good case against that, and we have a little vestige of three metering sites that are still left over that we don't use, and the logic was that those sites could be opened up and used in case we couldn't provide enough water. And secondly, it was on the allocation of transmission mains and how that worked. The upshot was that originally they were looking for a 9% increase for the Kenosha Water customers and a 34% increase for the village. The commission found in many of the areas that the village prevailed in our case. The Kenosha customers increase is going to be 16%, and 17%, and the village's rates are going to increase by 10%. So we went from 16 up to 34, and now we're back down to 10. It's still an increase. That doesn't mean a residential user's bill is going to increase by 10% because, even though it's a large number, it's not the complete cost of our system. It's all of our water costs. So we'll be getting notice from the PSC as to what our new rate is. We can't imply that 10% rate on all of our customers because we have a bit of an unusual situation because the power plant is in a premium rate class because they take water at such erratic levels that they have to pay a premium for that. Everybody else is on a pretty standard flow measurement. So I think it was I really believe it was a good effort. The things that became evident throughout the process, one is John Jr. has done a really good job of getting our system set up on a SCADA. He knows where everything is. It manages really well. He operates the system basically through computer. In Kenosha, they have people running around turning valves manually, and it just, we were able to really bring a lot of information to bear that before we hadn't been able to do. And it pointed out in the commission's findings that Pleasant Prairie did bring data to substantiate what we were doing. Kathy Gessel, who's not here, our books are in really good order. So the other people on the team that did a really good job for us was Vicki Hellenbrand from Baker Tilly, Paul Kent, and Ed Hughes from Boardman Law Firm in Milwaukee did an excellent job in preparing the village's case. So the important thing about us prevailing in this is that the rates that are established now become precedent setting for future considerations. So, even though the village might have only saved, probably about $280,000 a year, you compound that year after year, and it really starts adding up in the money. And it helps us make our next change at the next rate request where we can take a look at things like fire protection, taking those standby meters out of service, and we're going to be able to, I think, really prevail on the fact that we are truly a wholesale customer. So under this rate order, Pleasant Prairie now receives the lowest rate any of the customers that the city of Kenosha provides service to at $1.38 a cubic foot. So, like I say, it was a long process, but I want to thank our team. Did a really good job, putting this thing together, and we also had another guy, Jerry Hartman, who's an engineer out of Florida, who's now affiliated with Crystal Snyder through a common corporation. He really did some unique work for us, and I think. If he's still in the business when we have our next rate increase, we're going to be able to really break some new ground on rates. So with that, that's all I have, Mr. President.
1 minute.
Mike, the next time there's a rate increase that's being asked by the city, if it's a reasonable rate increase and when it's understandable, if it's not, do we have to go through the whole intervention process again?
Yeah, I believe the next time, it'd be my recommendation, even today, that, if they apply for a rate increase 6 years from now, 2 years from now, whenever it is, that we petition to intervene, because we still have two major areas that need to be resolved. That's public fire and the allocation of transmission expenses. So, because that means a lot. In a
And public fire protection under the state's rules is truly a subsidy. When we pay the city of Kenosha $86,000 in public fire protection, that money doesn't go to the water utility. It goes to the Kenosha General Fund to reduce their expenses, just like the public fire protection fee that we charge to our residents goes to the general fund rather than the water utility because it offsets the cost of oversizing the main. So the village receives no benefit of that money because it lowers the Kenosha tax levy for what they have to build for fire protection on their side, and because they provide no fire protection.
What's the did our intervention have any effect, positive or negative, on Bristol and or Summers?
Bristol's rates actually did go down, and part of that is it's a little deceptive, but they've gotten so much smaller. They have a smaller area of water than they had before at the last rate filing. So mostly that's annexed land in the city. The town of Summers did go up. I think they went up to 19%. So because they do use a lot of the city system to convey water, you know, by and large on the east side of the town along Sheridan and some of those areas over there.
I'll tell you, I give you guys a lot of credit, you and John Jr. and the whole team. We've been waiting for this for a long time.
Yeah.
And well overdue. And I hope the city doesn't try and take it out on us because they got beaten down a little bit if they want to come back at us. And
well, you know,
just got to keep our guard up.
I think, you know, it's not a personal thing, you know, and, you know, we really didn't get any nasty arguments. Really, it's the numbers. Numbers are numbers, and dollars are dollars. And we really tried to keep it at that level. So I hope that's not the case. You know, I mean, I think everybody's going to come out ahead on this thing if we're able to deliver a quality product to the residents here and to businesses so we can grow the economy in this area. I mean, that helps everybody. You know, you're not going to grow a local economy by having, you know, one entity get rich off water rates. That money doesn't translate back into the economy. Whereas if you have reasonable rates and people can rely on them and have good quality water, that helps us bring corporations to the community and creates jobs here. That's the real bottom line, not making another community pay more than what you're paying. That's
the reason I mentioned about the take it personal is because you go from 9% increase to 34% increase for no real reason. It's more than personal.
I didn't take a
personal. That was a son.
I thought they were talking about you guys, not me. So.
Well, I think one thing we need to remember is we're the city's largest water user, wholesale customer, and we've never been treated that way, unfortunately. And in the scale of economics, that just doesn't make sense. And they think they'd want to do that. And I, too, want to recognize everybody for their work on this because I know the extra time you guys put in, the late nights, the trips, weekends, you guys were working on this all the time, putting this case together for us. And, you know, whether the ratepayers realize it or not, you did a lot to protect the ratepayers and to protect future rates. And this case laid a lot of groundwork for us in the future and the way we can address things. And you touched on the economic development. And that's something that is probably more important than the rates we pay is the cost of what water is and how it can hinder or help economic development. Because we've talked to people that want to come into the community, and the cost of water, the availability of water, those are an important issue to a lot of people because water is going to become the next gold of the future. And we're very fortunate. And with your work on getting the diversion years ago, that set the groundwork for what we have here today with the industrial park and everything we have to offer to the residents in this community. And part of the quality of life and the reason we can offer low taxes and everything we do. So it's something that kind of hinges with everything else and was an important thing to do. And it was a lot of work, and you guys did a good job. So thank you.
That's all I have, Mr. President.
Okay.
I'd like to make one last comment. Going through the docket, Mr. Harman and everybody else, if I read properly, we got a 12.2 million gallon capacity in the village for 20,000 people, actually, basically. Now the city got 20 million for 100,000 people. So we got a better ratio. Also, the fire protection that we got, we built here in the village separate from the city. We can have fires in the village and supply the population, and we still have plenty, millions of gallons left. So that's the part that I understand that the Public Service Commission don't take that in consideration.
I think they did, but I'm not totally convinced when you read through the minutes and the notes that they really came to grips with it. And I think they would tend to lean more conservative and say, we don't want to be in a position where we've told the community you know, to pay a public fire protection fee, and you know they may be using water during the lowest point in the day when John's getting ready to fill the towers, and he hasn't filled the towers yet, and you could have a fire there. But you know that's where they, you know, we would hope they would have dug into the numbers a little bit deeper and see we still have like 4 million gallons sitting around. You know, and I think back to the biggest fire I've seen in Pleasant Prairie, and that was a Lauder fire. And, you know, we were bringing departments. There was over 30 departments here. Even at that point, that was back in 92, we were fighting a fire. All those fire trucks were drawing water off the system, and we were filling the towers at the same time. I mean, it would just, you know, and that's how you have to have the system work. So, you know, we had the capabilities to do it then, and even the ISO gave us the highest rating you can give a community for water storage because we store so much water. But I just really think that a lot of the decisions were falling Pleasant Prairie's way, and when you read through the discussion, it was like, well, we don't want to say that, you know, I mean, I'm paraphrasing what they're saying here, but, you know, we don't want to be in a position to say that they don't have to pay for it because they might need it, and if they can't get it because they don't need it, they don't want to have that on their case. And I think by between now and the next time this comes about, you know, we'll have some of those bypass meters addressed, and John will be able to give them however many years of inventory or how many years of records, given how many fires we have and what our use is, that shows that we're able to withstand that. But I was just, I wish they wouldn't have went that way, but I kind of understand why they did it.
Well, they're better than 34% anyway.
Well, yeah.
All right, that moves us on to item 9, new business. First item A being to receive the Planning Commission recommendation. Consider ordinance 13-31 to rezone the property located at 11450 23rd Avenue from the R4 Urban Single Family Residential District and Urban Landholding Overlay District into the R4 Urban Single Family Residential District with a General Agricultural Overlay District. Gene?
President, members of the board, the petitioner is requesting a zoning map amendment to rezone their property located at 11450 23rd Avenue from the R4 UHO to the R4 AGO districts. Specifically, they're requesting to rezone 12.4 acres of property so that that vacant property can be farmed. A portion of the property has been identified as being within a shoreline jurisdictional boundary and may also have some wetlands on the property. The waterway is not allowed to be filled or altered, and farming activities cannot affect the drainage on the adjacent or downstream properties. It's likely, however, we just wanted to make the property owners aware that when the wetlands are no longer being farmed, they likely will revert back to wetlands and would need to be determined whether or not that area could be developed if they choose to develop the land in the future. The AGO district requires that lots be a minimum of 10 acres with 300 feet of frontage on a public street. The property meets the minimum requirements. The proposed zoning map amendment is compliant with the village's 2035 comprehensive land use plan map, and specifically the map indicates that the property in the future is within this low medium density residential land use designation with an urban land reserve designation. Again, rezoning the property would allow it to be farmed at this time. My understanding is that they currently have a farmer that is willing to farm the land, and they have a current lease with that particular individual. The staff, the Plan Commission, recommend approval of the rezoning of the property, which is identified as Ordinance Number 13-31.
I make a motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Steve, second by Mike. Any further discussion? If not, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. That brings us to item B, to receive the Planning Commission recommendation to consider a lot line adjustment to add 5,312 square feet of land to Lot 20 from Lot 19 of the Westfield Heights subdivision for the proposed development of Goddard School.
Mr. President, members of the board, the petitioner is requesting to adjust the lot line between lots 19 and 20 of the Westfield Heights subdivision. Specifically, it involves 5,312 square feet of land to be adjusted and added from one lot, which is Lot 20, to Lot 19. After the adjustment, Lot 19 will be 2.507 acres, and Lot 20 will be 1.304 acres. The lot line adjustment is being requested so that all of the improvements that are being made for the Goddard School development will be solely on Lot 19, as conditionally approved by the Plan Commission on April 22, 2013. The proposed lot line adjustment complies with all the requirements set forth in the zoning ordinance, as well as the Land Division and Development Control Ordinance, and the staff recommends approval along with the Plan Commission.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Steve, second by Monica. Any further discussion on this item? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item C, consider ordinance 13-32 to create section 229-13F of the municipal code related to the storing of garbage and recycling containers.
Mr. President, members of the board, the staff has received several complaints over the last several years with respect to the placement of garbage cans to recycling containers. While the solid waste recycling ordinance does identify that the cans should not be placed to the curbside sooner than 12 hours before collection and then need to be removed, what it doesn't say is where the containers should be stored when the garbage is not being collected on garbage day. Most, if not all, of our newer subdivisions have provisions in them that specifically say the garbage cans shall be stored in an inconspicuous location, adjacent to the garage, within a garage, someplace so that it out of public view. In the unincorporated or the non-subdivision areas or the areas where there are no covenants and current status in the village, there happens to be some concern about not having an ordinance as to where the garbage containers should be kept. And so we have some residents that are now putting them in the center of their yard. They're putting them in very prominent locations because other neighbors have been calling to because they're upset about it. And some of them leave them at the street because they find it's easier for them to walk from their house all the way to the street to just put the garbage in and leave them there 24/7. So the staff would like a little assistance from the board just to have an ordinance in place so that it's clear that the containers should be brought away from the curb, up to the house, adjacent to the garage, when they're not being used on collection day. This should also avoid any concerns and problems with people leaving them out in the street right-of-way during snowfalls and other areas or other times when we have leaf collection.
John.
Monica.
Jean, question. What's going to happen when garbage cans are left out for more than 12 hours or 24 hours? Are they going to have someone from CD come out and follow it up with a complaint? Are we going to have the police department, parking enforcement?
We're doing it now. We are doing it now. We are spending a great deal of time, not only myself, my staff, parking enforcement officer, and the police department. And sometimes we're going back two and three times because residents keep calling and calling because they're making shrines in the middle of their front yards with the garbage cans.
Mike?
And when I saw this on the agenda, I gave it a lot of thought. I don't think I'm going to support this, and I'm going to give you my reasons. I think a better way to approach something like this is through their newsletter, asking people to be just a little bit more respectful about their neighborhoods and where they put their garbage cans and how to put their garbage cans. If we come up with another ordinance like this, all we're going to do is give some citizens the opportunity to call the police department or public or community development and complain about the violation of this ordinance. We can't enforce everything that we have going wrong now because we don't have the manpower to do it. And this is just going to give unhappy neighbors a reason to call and complain about the neighbors that they don't get along with. I haven't received one phone call about garbage cans that are not placed in the right place. I think in my neighborhood alone, somebody goes on vacation, they tell the neighbor, would you do me a favor, put my cans out and put them back when they're empty. So we help each other out. I don't think this is a good way to go. I think it's going to create problems, and it's going to cause people to complain about the village not doing the enforcement of an ordinance that they passed. And I don't want to see that happen either. So I'm not going to support this. I think I'd rather go a different route. I'm trying to educate people. I'm trying to say, hey, be a little bit more respectful to your neighbors in your own house and put the cans back where they belong and out of sight if you can. And I mean, there's incidents where people's garbage cans would have to go to the back of the house. Senior citizens would have to drag them out in the winter. How's that going to happen? I just think this is a bad way to go, at least for right now.
Gene, I already think you're getting those calls, so do you want to comment on this?
All I can tell you is we're getting the calls now. There's angry neighbors. I mean, the purpose of the staff here is not to rely on the village trustees to handle garbage complaints. We're trying to handle them as best we can. But when the neighbors start arguing and screaming and swearing and, like, verbally abusing my staff, I do contact the police department, and then I have the chief sends an officer out there to talk to the neighbors. Primarily, a lot of this is occurring on the very far west end of the village and the very far east end of the village. And it's not in platted subdivisions where, again, there's current restrictions or covenants. I'm not sure how else to handle it. We certainly have tried the kinder, gentler approach several times and asked them to get along with their neighbors, to work with their neighbors, see if they could bring their neighbors' garbage cans in. I'm sure that there's other issues going on between the neighbors as to why they're having these arguments. But if it would just be one neighbor calling on another neighbor, but it's not. This is a frequent complaint, and I just need to know where to go with it or how to deal with it from this point forward if we're not going to give me some tool to actually get them to stop doing it, because it's very disrespectful as how the residents are treating my staff.
Gene, how are you going to handle disabled folks and elderly that are unable to do this, as Mike said? Are we going to have some provision in there for them?
Mr. President, members of the board, we have a backdoor pickup right now, and so anyone that is disabled, we do require an annual doctor's note for that just to make sure that it's not abused. But and there's probably 20 residents that we have on the list where we actually go to the back door of their house or wherever they keep their can, take it, roll it up to the curb, dispose of it, and bring it back. And so we do have something in place for people that need it. We do require as a doctor's note just to make sure that it's not abused and that it is in place for anyone that chooses to use it.
Okay.
And I would just like to go on the record saying I did receive an email and a phone call from separate residents in the village. I had to call John Jr. to ask about placement of garbage cans because they're sitting out or they're 7 feet in my driveway. It's the neighbor against neighbor, and they just don't get along. And it's unfortunate. And it puts Gene's department, they're getting the complaints. They're getting the verbal abuse. We need to have something to help her department as well.
I would rather send out one of us to try and PR this problem.
I've been out there. I'm not going out.
You can't. You know what? Sometimes you just can't stop a fight between an uncooperative neighbor. And creating all kinds of ordinances sure as hell not going to make it better.
Well, I think in my experience I found that when you're a female, people are a lot more combative with you. If you go out, they're probably a little bit nicer to you because they'll listen to you because you're a man. But when you're a woman and you cite the ordinance and you explain to them why they're in violation, they're rude, they're combative, they're disrespectful, they're threatening. And that's what I've encountered this year. That's my perspective on
this. Would you care to make a motion?
Yes, I'm going to make a motion to approve Ordinance 13-32.
Do we have a second? I'll second it. Now, is there discussion on this?
Yes. Bye.
Thank you, Mr. President. I understand what everybody has said up here. I understand the position our staff is in, what they go through. My first looking at this was, gee, does an ordinance of one size fits all really fit or work in this situation? I lean toward it's certainly far better if we can eliminate some of these neighborly fights, if we can eliminate some of the calls on the staff and the burden on the staff, because, like you say, we do have something in place for the disabled and elderly. So I agree with passing the motion. I really do.
Steve.
You know, I'm a kind of a reading what the amendment and listen what Mike say. I do believe that maybe we should put in the village bulletin a notice that unless the situation is solved by the residents, we should have to take further measure. Another time, after 60 days, for example, pass the resolution with the amendments at that time. Cannot wait. Not to show, because they were going to say more ordinance, more enforcement. That's, you know, I got complaints too. I got one neighbor in my neighborhood. They put the garbage in the front, from the curb to the front. And I talked to that person, it's not good. So I think we give them a fair warning. If it doesn't happen in 60 days, no improvement, then they pass an ordinance.
Clyde.
You know, this isn't going to eliminate. If neighbors are going to fight, they're going to fight. But the objective here should be to keep the village as clean and neat as possible. And that should be the aspect we look at in this ordinance.
I could say something on that. John.
Mike.
Prior to automated pickup, when we had private companies picking up our garbage, we had garbage all over the place because of crows, animals, and people mm-hmm. just didn't care how they put their garbage out. Now we have identified containers for recyclables and garbage. We have virtually no complaints on garbage pickup. Public Works is doing a phenomenal job.
Yes.
And we're going to pass an ordinance because one neighbor can't get along with another one in a certain incidence. And I'm telling you, it's going to, I think we're creating a bigger burden on this village by passing this ordinance instead of trying to get the people to get along and be respectful for one another. We can't handle the zoning complaints that we have now, and we're going to add to it. That doesn't make any sense to me, unless you're ready to hire two more people for about $120,000 with benefits to enforce, put your garbage cans away. I don't think it's right.
I think we're already doing that. Chief? Welcome. Did I say welcome to Pleasant Prairie yet?
Every meeting. Thank you. And I'm still happy to be here like I was the first one. I think what this does, and I am by no means in favor of enacting ordinances just to hammer people with citations. I agree with you, and based on your experience as a cop for all those years, people are going to fight. What this does, and what it may do, is prevent ongoing calls back and forth, back and forth. We go there the first time, we do try to talk to people, and that's our job, is to resolve issues. So you go out and talk to people, but without some sort of a hammer as to consequences, it relies on their feelings as neighbors, and if they don't like each other to begin with, it's going to continue. So this may aid in those return calls. I'm not quite sure how many we have. I didn't research it, but I know I've had frequent conversations with community development on these things, and I have sent officers out. I've been out. I'm in the process now of speaking with a couple of neighbors about similar issues, one-on-one with them. So I know these things do happen. I also know, based on my experience, that if we're able to tell people, all right, if that garbage can doesn't go back, there are citations involved, sometimes money talks. So, all right.
One more comment.
Thanks.
Okay. Mike.
Gene talked to me about the problems that Gene had talked to me about the issues of people putting in the middle of the yard and things like that. And typically, there's always a knucklehead who's going to find some way to irritate their neighbor. And there's always going to be a neighbor who gets irritated over the slightest thing. And I think if we put this ordinance in effect, I agree with the chief, it give you some leverage to deal with that, but then we'll move on to the next thing. People who are bad neighbors are bad neighbors are bad neighbors. And it is, once we adopt one of these things, Jean might take care of, like she said, she's had, over a couple of years, she's had about 12. So we're averaging, six a year. And I bet you out of the six a year, some of them are the same people. But once we put this on the books, everybody wants to lever somebody is going to be using this, once they get knowledge of it. And Chris does a really good job of publicizing, what you have to do, and we'll have this is out there. My concern is that if somebody doesn't get it moved within 12 hours, we're going to get the call. If we're saying the container should be stored in an inconspicuous location, inconspicuous to who? On the side or the rear of the garage or inside the garage or in the shed? I guess I'd want this ordinance to either be totally specific that says it has to go here or there, so if that's it, or be able to give the staff some latitude to say, if it was been raining a lot or if it's been snowing, they haven't got it off the curb yet, they've got the latitude to say that. I could think of one neighborhood where we've been dealing with people who are parking five feet in front of someone else's house on a public street. And I can't begin to tell you how much staff time we spend on dealing with people who don't know how to get along with each other. And what I don't want this to be is another reason for people to say, I got something else that, they didn't get it out within 12 hours, or that I could still see it when I looked out my window or whatever. And that's, and that's the problem. And I think that's my concern in this thing is that it, in some respects it's vague and it gives some latitude that we're still going to be, arguing over the fact of how soon did it get back? Did it get back right at 12 hours, or was it soon enough? It wasn't soon enough. Now, we could, on all our ordinances, we can say, try and talk people down from being, crazy and say, just put those containers back so we don't have to deal with it again. And some people will do that. But, if you look at how many of our ordinances and how much staff time is directed at dealing with people who don't know how to be neighbors, with their neighbors, we can never create enough ordinances. Because it just, they're creative and they keep going and going and going. So, my recommendation or my request is that, my initial inclination was I wasn't in favor of this because I didn't think the problem was as pervasive as Gene described. And secondly, I think it really gives a lot of latitude. It's kind of vague, and then I think we're going to have a tough time enforcing it because it's, when you say as soon as possible or inconspicuous, we start defining, we get stuck in this thing where we have to then justify why we're saying what's inconspicuous and what's not and what soon as possible mean. And it just, that's an issue. I think that as a practical matter, you're dealing with irrational people to begin with who aren't able to accomplish the common sense act of taking their garbage container and putting it back in their garage. You got to think that you're not dealing with people that are going to be rational with you when you're trying to talk them into doing something that's right. And it's either got to get real specific, which doesn't give us latitude to try and deal with it, or, you know, we just try and deal with it in other ways.
Mike, a lot of people put their garbage out the night before. You think 24 hours would give them enough time?
Yeah, and I, you know, we have that ordinance now, and we really haven't enforced that. Because, again, 99.5% of the people get it. You know, they'll put it, maybe right. If it's, they'll put it out, you know. I have some people that put it on my neighborhood because they don't like to be
so
out.
So we have an ordinance now that says 24 hours, you got to take them in, take them out.
12 hours.
12 hours.
Right.
Okay, what about 24 hours? That gives everybody enough time. And it takes away this tool for these people to argue back and forth and use the village. So it is the punishing factor against these neighbor disputes, because whether it's garbage cans or anything else, you know, they just can't let up on their neighbors. They can't get along. But we don't need to put the staff through the aggravation of getting these calls over and over and over. So if they had 24 hours, that's more than reasonable off time, because then what's the excuse? And if you can't do it in 24 hours, you better get somebody to do it for you then. Because I don't see a reason why a garbage can sit out more than 24 hours. If you put it out at night, have it in by the next night.
Okay. Mike? We already have that in place. I think what Mike
no,
hit on...
No, we have 12 hours
we
in
have
place. 12,
all right, we have a time element in place. What Mike hit on is very true. There's to put the cans in an inconspicuous spot. And I'll give you a perfect example. My neighbor, who keeps an impeccable yard, has his garbage, he's on a corner lot, has his garbage cans on the side of his garage facing 34th Avenue. If he and the guy across the street ever get into an argument, the guy across the street is going to say, I got to look at those garbage cans every time I look out my front window, and I'm getting sick of it. And that's the kind of battle you're going to create by having this ordinance as it is. And I agree, Mike, it's too vague. The time element, John, I don't disagree with.
Gene, what do you think about that argument?
I would just get rid of the language in an inconspicuous location. Just say alongside or adjacent to the side or rear of the house. I can tell you we've got 22 subdivisions that have this exact language, and they self-police it, and the people have to bring them in. They have to go on the side or they go in the garage. It's not a problem in the newly platted subdivision since 1989. No problem. It's the ones previous to that. And, again, it's the people who leave them out at the curbside the whole time, who want to put them in the center of the lawn. You know, the situation is we can take the inconspicuous location. I actually took that out of the many, many, many covenants that have been adopted by this village over the last 20 years. And so if you take out the container shall be stored alongside the rear, the side of the or the rear of the house or garage. Not everybody has a garage. Or inside a garage or shed. And like in my subdivision, they have to go inside a building. They can't be outside. So, I mean, to give them an option either way.
And they don't have to be shielded by anything?
I think that would be a lot more difficult in this village than at least having them adjacent to the garage or the house.
Well, even the last line says, containers shall be properly screened from public view.
We can take that out if you want to take that out.
Well, I mean, you have to say public view from the same street the front door's on, or because you're going to have every corner lot that's going to have two public views.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And if we remove that eliminates.
Yeah. If you want to just say it has to be on the side or rear, inside the house, or we don't mean inside the house, inside the garage or shed.
No. Mr. President.
Yes, Tom.
Just for clarification, the current section 292-14 hours of collection states, collection containers and materials shall not be placed at the curb before 6 p.m. Yes. On the day prior to the regularly scheduled collection day and shall be removed from the curb within 12 hours after collection. So that's what's currently on the books.
It is 24. No, if you can put
no,
it out.
6 o'clock.
No. It says
no, we don't pick up till
6 in the evening. And then, you know, if you don't get home, if they pick it up after you, that's 24 hours.
Then it should be sufficient.
So we don't need another. What are the duplicating analysis that we don't need?
With the revision.
Tom is going to read the last sentence again to you of the current code.
Collection containers and materials shall not be placed at the curb before 6 p.m. on the day prior to the regularly scheduled collection day and shall be removed from the curb within 12 hours after collection.
And that's all I'm saying is shall be removed within 12 hours after collection. It's the okay, same thing.
So right there.
Yeah, it is, because yeah, if you put it out at 6 at night and they collect it
8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
You got 20.
If you're not there, you've got 12 hours after that point to collect it. If they picked it up at 5 at 3:30, the latest we pick them up, then it's 12 hours from there.
You got 26 hours.
Correct, but if you say 24 hours in the ordinance, if you put it out at 6 in the morning, you now have till 6 in the morning the next day. If you say you have 24 hours to have it out there.
That's why I said, you know, the current ordinance, we don't enforce the current ordinance because it, you know, we don't, you know, I guess, you know, we can
probably figure out. Why don't we enforce the current ordinance?
We don't know when, we really don't know when they put it out.
How does that language affect if, you know, you have a holiday in the week and we're delayed a day? Is that considered an off regularly scheduled day?
Well, they shouldn't, you know, if they knew their scheduled day was being moved back, then they'd put it out a day later.
It'll be on our calendar, right?
Right. But, you know, do we really know when we, you know, how long it's been from the time we picked it up?
That's why I have cameras and timesheets and all that.
Could I ask a favor of you? We can have, we could talk about this all night. Yeah. I think there's enough information going back and forth. Could we ask that this be heard at the next board meeting with the refined language so we can maybe make an informed good
John,
decision?
What do you think about the garbage situation?
Mr. President, members of the board, I don't believe that the ordinance revision is about the times that the collection that the container is put out or that the time that it is collected by solid waste staff. This revision talks about where to store them when they're not out for collection, per se, and that's really what it is. Like Gene had said, or like Mike had stated, our collection is done by 2 p.m. every day. Our guys are out by the landfill, probably even by quarter to 2. It takes an hour to run to the landfill and back, and so you really need to have them in with that 12 hours before 1 a.m. And so I think that if you put it up after 6 p.m., most people come home from work, like you said, Mr. President, put their cans out the night before. As long as they have them out by midnight, you really cover within the ordinance. I think what Gene is trying to put together is where do you store these cans when they're not out for collection? And a lot of people are leaving them out at the curb. They're rolling them halfway up the driveway. They're putting them right in front of the garage. And so I think your intent, and Gene, correct me if I'm mistaken, is, you know, just to really improve the look of the village to make sure that these containers are put somewhere where they're not out for public display.
And I have a one-sentence ordinance for you. Containers shall be stored along the side or rear of the house or garage, comma, or inside the garage or shed, period. Everything else is addressed in the current ordinance.
I think I got a problem with this.
Yep.
You have a problem?
That would be helpful. That will work for us. I can read it again.
Okay, read it again, will you please?
Containers shall be stored along the side or rear of the house or garage or inside a garage or shed, period. That's it.
That's better. I can live with that. But still, we got to put that in the village flyer monthly.
We had a motion and a second. Would you care to amend your motion or change it?
I will remove my motion. Okay. I will withdraw it if you would like to remove your second.
I will remove the second.
And I will make a motion to accept Gene's revision. Will that still be Ordinance 13-32, Gene?
Yes. Okay. Well, that would be up to Jane, but I would assume it would
Jane?
Be.
13.
Okay.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Clyde. Any further discussion? I think they should get us out of the dumps. Yeah. If not, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Now we'll move on to item D. Consider the request of RC Westwood Estates LLC for the termination and release from the Memorandum of Development Agreement and the amendment to the development agreement entered into by and between the previous landowner, Westwood Estates LLC, and the Village of Pleasant Prairie for the public-related infrastructure improvements in the Westwood Estates Manufactured Housing Addition.
Mr. President, members of the board, the petitioner is requesting a termination and release from the Memorandum of Development Agreement and amendment to the development agreement entered into by and between the previous landowner, Westwood Estates, Inc., in the village of Pleasant Prairie for public-related infrastructure improvements in the Westwood Estates Manufactured Housing Addition. The Memorandum of Development Agreement between the village of Pleasant Prairie and Westwood Estates was recorded on May 18, 1999, with the Kenosha County Register of Deeds Office as document 1145052, and it was amended by an amendment to the development agreement recorded on May 15, 2001, with the Kenosha County Register of Deeds Office as document number 1218834. All of the public-related improvements, as referenced in the agreements, have been completed, inspected, and accepted by the village pursuant to Resolution 11-46. In addition, all of the obligations referenced in the agreements have been fulfilled, and financial securities held by the village have been disbursed, with the exception of the balance we have of cash on hand of $2,636.11, which we had held. Six street trees had not made it the one-year warranty. They've all been since replaced. The board can decide whether or not to release that $2,636.11. This development in your packets of your information, the resolution to approve all of the public improvements was approved by the village board in December of 2011, I believe, and a public resolution was adopted at that time accepting all the public improvements. Again, these were public improvements for 80th Street as well as 85th Avenue. So that would be, let's see, where am I here? Right here, 80th Street and then 85th Avenue. The rest of the development is private, but this only refers to the public improvements, the sewer, water, storm sewer, curb and gutter infrastructure, as well as the roads, streetlights, and street trees. Since we've already accepted the resolution for all these public improvements and this property is being sold, they had requested that the village release the formal development and memorandum agreements for this development, similar to what we've done in the past for other projects in the village.
I'll make a motion to accept the termination and release from the development agreement for Westwood Estates.
Motion by Monica, second by me. Any further discussion?
Yeah. How are we going to affect us in the long run?
It shouldn't affect the village at all. You've already accepted the public improvements by resolution. They've been inspected and accepted by us. So this just releases any further obligations that they would have, and they have no further obligations because you've already accepted them.
So any future problems over there, who take care of that?
The improvements are owned by the village of Pleasant Prairie, so that will be the village's responsibility to maintain these improvements.
Future improvements?
Existing improvements that were put in a number of years ago.
But all the future ones?
Future ones haven't been constructed yet. Future improvements haven't been constructed yet, so we're not releasing any obligations or liabilities. There are no other public improvements to be installed in this development.
So we have no provision for the future of that?
There are no future public improvements. There are only private improvements left to be completed, and we'll enter into separate agreements with them for that. But we don't have any obligations because they're private.
We have a motion. We have a second. Any other further discussion? If not, those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item E, consider ordinance 13-33 to amend Chapter 360 of the Municipal Code relating to weights and measures regulations.
Mr. President, we've had a responsibility from the state of Wisconsin to monitor weights and measures for scales and gas pumps and things like that ourselves, or contract with the state to do it. In 2004, we started the process where we allocated $5,000 a year, which was passed on by the village to the people who needed this service for what the state charges us. At that time, we had a yearly license fee of $25, and there was a 20% administrative fee for us to monitor and keep track of the calculations. But what's happened over time is we really don't have a good list of the businesses. We don't have a business licensing system. So as time went on, there were some businesses that might have been in the had a requirement for weights and measures, and they changed how they operated, and we still build them, but they didn't have anything to monitor or the scale to do anything. So, and under the new state budget, you know, we can't charge anything more than what it actually costs us to do it, let alone charge over something we don't do at all. So this ordinance, you know, places how the fees are collected, the notices of invoice, and how payments are going to be made, and it's basically being made within 30 days once we've determined that they actually do need that service and they've received it, and it's going to be based on an administrative fee of 10%, not 20, and any fraction thereof of anything that we have to spend to take care of that. Since the state's getting involved in everything, I would be just as happy as they, as long as they're going to do this, they would just do the whole thing, but that's not the case, so you know, we've still got this end to do, and this makes it a cleaner operation for us.
And actually, it's going to be actual cost.
Right.
So not 10% or 20%. Calculate the cost of prorating the fees out that Mike gets from the state and sending invoices, you know, postage, staff time, and it'll be right down to the dollar that we've spent, and just recouping our costs is all it is. Mm-hmm. There's no reason for it to come to the board for anything.
Yeah, you've been hearing this every year. But to be honest with you, every year we've been billing people that didn't get the service, and I think there might be some people that needed the service, and we weren't getting them. So,
move approval of 1333.
Second.
Motion by Mike, second by Steve. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item F, consider resolution 13-18 to authorize disposal of surplus lab equipment.
Mr. President, members of the board, on May 6, 2012, the Village Board of Trustees approved a contract for CT Labs to perform sanitary sewer surcharge and water sample testing to meet DNR requirements. This service has been running very successful and has allowed lab personnel to be assigned to other essential maintenance duties within the utility department. The Pleasant Prairie Lab is no longer permitted by the DNR and no longer serves as a useful function. The utility department would like to dispose of the following unused lab equipment. More equipment than I can probably pronounce or know exactly what it's used for, but it was purchased in the 70s. There's been some minor upgrades to it, but there is still a value to a lot of the equipment that's out there for doing the testing. We would dispose of the equipment on eBay, and I recommend that the above laboratory equipment be disposed of, and I can answer any questions.
Motion to approve resolution 13-18.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Clyde. Any discussion on this item?
I have one question. Are we going to put up the cabinets?
Yes, we are.
Okay, because they're not on the list.
Yeah, we are going to put up the cabinets, the beakers, the flasks, everything. This is just a major equipment, but I will make sure that the revised list shows all the cabinets and ovens, everything else that's listed. Thank you.
Steve.
Question. Mike. And John, should it be better to advertise in the league magazine or other community may use or may need this type of equipment?
We can go through and do that also. We can run it through the league for a promotion and put on eBay also. There's a lot of private labs. Most of the labs that are municipally run would probably not be interested in this. It's more of the other labs that have equipment very similar to this. But we'll definitely take your recommendation and post the information for the league also, and then whoever comes up with the highest bid will be selected.
Most municipal labs are like us, they don't have any money. So right. We're going to have better luck selling in the private sector rather than relying on one of our poor
customers. Whatever is best. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I think we had a motion and a second, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. That brings us to item G, consider ordinance 13-34 to amend Chapter 214 in Municipal Code relating to the dog park fees.
Last year, as part of the five-year CIP for the Parks Department, the board had authorized a dog park for the Village of Pleasant Prairie and other residents within the community. We're looking at having that dog park in Ingram Park, and it's actually shown just to the left side on the screen of the pond. It's probably about 2 acres. We're looking at having a large dog park and a small dog park. The ground has been graded. We actually have a milkbone pond within the large dog park. There will be some paths in there, some trees, and even a couple of fire hydrants we're going to put in there just for a display and use by the dogs. And so this evening we're looking to establish the dog park fees for the dog park. Currently, if you want to go to a dog park, they're all maintained and run by Kenosha County. We're looking at just doing our own dog park license, having our own fees. One of the concerns, as I talked with Mr. Polakoff, was having it overrun by too many people, by too many dogs in the area. And so we thought if we just kept our own tags and our own management of the park, we would be better off, and it would be a better park for anyone that uses it. And so we did parallel the Kenosha County fees because it is going to be a very nice park. It's going to be very popular. The fees for an annual village resident for first dog of $20. If you're a village resident, senior or disabled, it's $10. A non-resident for first dog, $25. Additional tag for each dog, up to two additional, $5 each. An annual tag replacement fee of $5. Those are just the annual fees where you would go. There's going to be a little blue tag with a milkbone shape to it, have some wording on it, so you would properly identify that the dog has paid the correct fees. There's also going to be a drop box, very similar to what you would see at the DNR state parks or any boat launch areas, where you can just do a daily pass. So for village resident per dog per day is $2, and for non-residents per dog per day of $5. We are looking to start constructing the fencing probably within about the next 3 weeks, some other minor improvements, and we're hoping to have some sort of an open house ribbon cutting for the park in October. It is on the Park Commission agenda to work on the agenda for this dog park, and we are very excited to host the opening of this. And so I can answer any questions on the dog park fees for Ingram Park at this time.
John, have you considered naming rights for them? Say some person wanted to call it like Wrigley Field or something, you know.
We have not done that yet, and that's something that we can bring up at our park commission meeting. I know we've done that with other trails and parks, as Prairie Springs Park in the past, and it's really a good way to promote the new park. So that's something that I can probably work with Chris Lepore on and the park commission to have a name for our first dog park, because it really is a very exciting time for village residents.
Okay. Mike?
John, is there going to be a separation for big dogs and small dogs?
Yes, there will be.
There will be.
Okay. Yes, we're going to have a 4-foot fence around the entire perimeter and separating the large dog park and small dog park. And there are going to be separate openings for the large dog park and small dog park.
Great. Thank you.
Will there be a limitation to the breeds allowed in there? Or?
There are quite a few real rules. It's not really by breed, but it's by temperament of the dog. So that's really how we address that. We'll be working with our police chief and parking enforcement, as he will be monitoring via dog licenses or day passes at that park the same way that he's doing the parking enforcement.
Steve?
I got a question. Is it going to be a grand opening for the owners or for the dogs? Are you going to take out dog treats or what?
Are we going to have dog treats?
If we want to be for the owners or for the dog? The grand opening.
Are you talking for the grand opening?
Yeah.
We are still working with local businesses to solicit any type of goodie bags, and we are taking any sorts of donations for the event. So if you would like to be a part of it, we would definitely welcome any support that you can give for the program.
I will bring my dog, definitely.
That would be great.
Mike?
Thank you. Great job in putting all this together. I have a question unrelated. I get conflicting answers. Do we have a village-wide leash law ordinance?
Yes.
In other words, if I have a dog, does that dog have to be on a leash in my yard? In my yard.
Not in the yard.
I think the way the ordinance reads is the dog has to be under your control.
Yep.
If you can do that without a leash, you can do it without a leash. If you have it,
okay.
But if you can't, then you need a leash. And the chief might remember that. It's been a while since I've looked at that, but that's historically has been what we said. Some people can control their dog by yelling at them or do whatever, and the dog will do what they want. But if not, then they need to have them on a leash.
Okay.
And the control, that was the order you said.
Unless you electrocute your dog. You know.
Okay.
Motion to approve ordinance 13-34.
Second. Motion by Monica, second by Clyde. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item H, consider ordinance 13-35 to amend chapter 242 of the municipal code relating to RecPlex program and rental fees.
Mr. President and members of the board, we have in front of you for your consideration ordinance change 13-35. As it pertains to the ice arena, we're updating the ordinance to remove the annual skate pass as it is covered under the membership currently. And we have made small increases to rental and skate programs. One note I need to tell you is that in the board packet, skate rentals went from $3 to $6. That was incorrect. Skate rental is going from $3 to $4, and the ordinance has been changed to reflect that. Birthday party and rental fees have not gone up significantly, more on the non-member fees. And each season, all the RecPlex staff looks at their programs, compares it against the community, and offers these recommendations for program fee changes. And there are no significant fee changes in this ordinance, and the RecPlex staff is recommending approval.
Who are our comparisons?
You look at the basketball programs at CYC and around Kenosha area, and so those are the ones we look at. We look at the YMCAs, and so and Kenosha Ice, the Gurney ice skating rink. And as far as birthday parties, all the kids' birthday parties, whether it's Chuck E. Cheese or Monkey Joe's. So those are the comparisons that we're making.
What are the amounts we're looking at for changing here? Do you have those handy? I didn't see it here. Where am I?
For example, so basic birthday parties for members are currently $130. There's no increase. For non-members, they're currently $150. There's a $15 increase. So that's follow suit for most of the non-member birthday parties. We find that we have more non-members utilizing our birthday parties, and we're still very economical for people to enjoy our facility.
Okay, I see it here. You're just talking a small amount.
Very small. Insignificant increase.
Okay. Yep. I move approval.
Second.
Motion by Mike, second by Clyde. Any discussion? What is the mascot that's up there?
That is Dazzle, the starfish, and you can add him to your birthday party for $50.
Okay.
But, yes, he is seen around the RecPlex on the weekends. So.
Okay, I was just hoping he wasn't a snowflake. That's all.
Oh, jeez. If your employee in trouble, you get to be Dazzle because it's hot in there.
With a motion, a second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item I, consider an amendment to the employee handbook regarding residency requirements.
Mr. President, since this is something we're not capable of determining anymore, we're bringing our handbook in compliance with state law, or state budget, since it's a budgetary item, to release all employees from their residency requirements from the village. The only ones that will be accepted are the ones that are covered under existing contract. In some cases, those are, we're not going to even do that anymore. So it's the full-time police and fire would be exempt. The only people we're recommending follow the 15-mile limit is paid on-call personnel. And if we're not able to do that, what it really means is an end to our paid-on-call program after a while. A lot of these people, the number of people that do it because they're interested in doing it and they're in the community drops. It's really an opportunity for young men and women to get fully trained up to be a firefighter or a paramedic. So that's they're going to still be under that 15-mile jurisdiction. But everybody else is, if they want to live in Joliet or they want to live in
Timbuktu.
Timbuktu, as long as they show up for work every day, they're legal. So.
I'll make a motion to accept the amendment to the employee handbook regarding residency requirements.
I don't second that. I don't like it. Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Steve. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carries. I thought they would have voted on this first, too. And then just, no. Item J is consider an agreement to perform billing services for the Fire and Rescue Department.
Mr. President, the chief is negotiating an agreement with Fire Recovery USA to perform the billing that we do on fire calls. Now, you know, we bill for rescue service, and that's not that complicated. I mean, it's complicated, but the basis for the charge is pretty well established, and we generally are fairly successful collecting it. But in Wisconsin, cities get reimbursed by the state for going on a fire call on a state or county highway. Towns get reimbursed by the state government if they go to a fire call on a state or town highway. Villages don't. So, and that makes a lot of sense because that came out of Madison. That's how they decided it. And that's what we do. Consequently, one of the unintended consequences is that a lot of the billing services that do the collection are not good at collecting fire fees because nobody's asking them to do it. They, you know, there's not that many. They're not collecting those fees because cities and towns don't care. They just bill it to the state and they get their money. The service we did, although they, you know, they did our ambulance billing, they were not getting the same return on what we were collecting. So now in Illinois, they have the state doesn't pay anything for anything down there. So the fire departments and fire protection districts are responsible for using a service to go out and get all their collections put together. Chief is recommending that we enter into an agreement with Fire Recovery. Our previous company had a collection rate of 40 to 50%, collection rate on fire billing. Versus 70 to 80% is what Fire Recovery is getting. Now they're charging more, but our net would actually be higher. I know the chief's been working on this for a while, and he's met with other chiefs in Illinois. And given the fact that you know there's probably a healthy percentage of the fire calls that we go that are rescue related on a road or a highway are from Illinois, and we can't put it on a tax roll. We just you have to chase it. I think this is a good way to deal with it and to get us reimbursed on it. I don't see the state giving us the ability to do that anymore. In fact, I probably see the state saying they're not going to pay the cities and towns anymore after a while, and they're just going to tell everybody on your own. But since we've been that way forever and we haven't been able to change it, I'd recommend we contract with somebody who really actually does it all the time and is successful at it.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Clyde, second by Steve. Further discussion?
I just want to point out two items. The first one is that the billing that we would be doing with this company is also integrated with the firehouse software that the fire department currently uses. Mm-hmm. So it integrates. It's going to be quick. It's going to be complete. And I actually got to see that software firsthand with the detailed reporting when I was at Station 1. The other thing I like is that there's a 30-day notice that either party can give to get out of the contract, so we're not locked into it for a year or 6 months, which keeps everyone on their toes. So hats off to the chief for negotiating the contract.
Anything we missed, Craig?
No, sir.
Okay.
Good. Anything to add?
I'm sorry?
Anything to add? You stepped up to the plate there. So
I don't.
We want to get our money's worth.
Yeah. No, we've had a real good luck with A&B from a medical billing perspective, and that's not the business they're in anymore. And it's So, you know, AMB does a wonderful job for us from a collection rate and a follow-up. So, but the fire recovery for the fire side, as I understand it, one of the larger in the nation, and they seem like they have a good track record.
Okay. I got a question for Craig. Craig, who will recover the fees for the fire department, for the insurance company or the individuals?
Yes.
Which?
Both.
Both? Okay.
I mean, a lot of times if the insurance company doesn't cover it, you know, even from the medical side as well.
Okay. Thank you.
We have a motion. We have a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Item K is to consider operator license applications on file.
There's five of them tonight, four renewals and one original, the original for Richard Levin, renewals for Thomas Christie, Mary Debish, Mary Harper, Nicholas Kulinski. I recommend approval of all five.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion on any of these? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
I think it was a motion by Mike, second by. Yeah,
she's
Item 10, Village Board comments. You're done.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion by Clyde, second by Steve. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carries.
Mike.